Okay. So I didn't bring my Gemara today, because today's not Yuma Day. Instead, this is like, this sugya is, if you had to do, like, I'm going to teach the Brisker method, and I'm going to give, like, a sample shear to demonstrate it, I think this would be one of your better candidates, the sugya of carbon sibur, and how exactly we define a carbon sibur, right? So if... So the question, right, so all we're going to do is we're just going to, like, knock down 7 proofs to just kind of clinch that this is an ironclad concept. And then once we've locked down the proofs, we'll look at a couple of problems, and then maybe we'll kind of sharpen our definitions a little bit. Before we start, all thanks have to go to Rav Dani Wolf, who was one of my Rebbeim and Gush, and then wrote the Sefer later. He gave shir, carbon sibur is one of his favorite topics. He gave shir in this Mishnah Aleph when we did Menachos, and he gave shir in this Mishnah Bet when we did Temura, and then, not surprisingly, it's one of the articles in his book, so I've got, like, the notes version of this shir, we've got the book version of this shir, so a lot of this Torah is from him, but not all, but most of it is, so, yeshkach. Okay, so the first question to start with, right, when we talk about carbon sibur and how it relates to a carbon yachid, is this machlokas between Rashi and Ramban al Torah at the very beginning of Sefer Vayikra, right? Why? Because what's the case that Rashi and Ramban talk about? What does the pasuk say? I didn't put it in the source codes, right? No. Okay, so it's... Right, right. So you shall bring your carbon, and which carbon are we talking about in the beginning of Sefer Vayikra? Ola, right? We're talking about an ola, and specifically an ola snedava, right? This is a voluntary carbon, right? Examples of mandatory ola that we bring?
Iyah.
Excellent. Good, right? The individual has to bring an ola iyah, which is what when?
On
the chagim, exactly. And any other examples of mandatory ola? The Tamid, exactly. The Tamid, right, is your archetypical public carbon ola, right? The Musafin are ola. Yeah, okay, good. So those are, right, we have our mandatory olas, but we start off with the voluntary ola, so carbon chem, right? So the multitude, the tzibur, right, the multitude is bringing in voluntary carbon. So what exactly is this voluntary carbon that the Tzibur can bring? What is this talking about? Right? So what does Rashi say? Yeah. Do you know what that is?
It comes from the extras of, like, the harvest that's supposed to be doing it
to the death. Excellent. Right, we had, right, Parshas Shkalim was, is this week, right? Is this week Parshas? Yeah, this week's Parshas Shkalim, right? So you have all the money from the Machtes HaShekel, which is given to the Trumas HaLishka, and they use that money to buy all the carbon sibur for the year. Inevitably, hopefully, there's going to be leftover extra money, right? You know, if all of Klai Yisrael is giving a half shekel, and in Chag Gadya, so how much does the goat cost in Chag Gadya? Costs
Trezuze.
Trezuze is one shekel. So that would mean that one machzis a shekel should get you half a goat, right? So two people's machzis a shekel should get you a goat. So if all of Klai Yisrael is giving a half shekel, that should cover our Talmud and Musaf costs for the year, hopefully. So you're going to have some extra money. So what do you do with this extra money? It doesn't go to waste. It goes to Kayetz HaMizbeach, right? That we want to basically have the Mizbeach running, right? It is, we have, very beginning of the year, we talked about the various ideas that the Klei HaMikdash should be constantly used, right? We have the Tamid and the Mizbeach HaChitza, and we have the Ketores and the Mizbeach HaPnimi, we have the Menorah, we have the Shulchan, right? All these are constantly being used. So another aspect of that is that, right, so that we don't have the Mizbeach be idle during office hours, right, between Tamid Shal Shachar and Tamid Shal Bein Harbayim. So if no individuals are bringing their Kabanos, we will use this Kayetz HaMizbeach funds to bring voluntary Ola. Okay, so Rashi says, right, what is the voluntary carbon tzibur ola? It is these the extra money from the lishka, from the trumas alishka, and that is the kaitz mizbeach. Okay. So Ramban, right? Ramban raises a really interesting question, which is, right, what's another way you could potentially conceive of a carbon of the tzibur?
As the shuta.
Right. So what would the case be?
Where a lot of people contribute money and like chip in.
Yeah, right. We'll have like, we want 100% participation, right? This like a nationwide chesed project, right? Or not a chesed project, an avoda project, I guess, right? We want everyone to chip in, and the entire tzibur will volunteer to generate a carbon of the tzibur. So is that considered a carbon tzibur? Or what would the other option be if it's not considered a carbon of the tzibur? Shoots a foot, right? Exactly. It could be a carbon of partners, right? Which we talked about those differences when we talked about what exactly is the par kohen gadol, right? Is it yachid, tzibur, or shetzer? So if all the nation as individuals donate to create a carbon, what is its status? So the answer is, as most things, when you ask a question, it's a machlokes, right? Right? Who says what? Or by implication? I think they're the way around. No?
Doesn't Rashi say
yeah, because Rashi only mentions the case of Kayetz and Mizbeach. And then... Yeah, what was the Takrivu line? Right, so those would be individuals can create a ola of partnership, and a tzibur can create an ola through kayetz hamizbeach. Right, so it sounds like for Rashi, you're not going to have a carbon. If the entire nation volunteers to create a carbon, it will be a carbon of partners, and the Ramban suggests that maybe it could be a carbon of the tzibur. Right, he raises that possibility. So,
explain Rashi's again.
So Rashi's saying, if the carbon was purchased with communal funds, that's the kayetz hamizbeach, right? So that would be a carbon tzibur. If the entire, if everybody volunteers to chip in to buy a separate carbon, that will be a carbon of partners. Who are the partners? All of Klal Yisrael. But it's a carbon of partners, not a carbon of the tzibur. Whereas the Ramban says that if the entire tzibur chips in to buy a carbon, it will be categorized as a carbon tzibur. So which position seems to make more sense intuitively?
If everyone contributes, then they should all be owners as well. There should be multiple owners bringing a carbon together.
Okay. Right. So to argue that it is a carbon of Shutfin makes a lot of sense, right? Certainly they're partners because they all invested in it. Does it make sense to say that it is a carbon tzibur, or does it make more sense to say that it's not a carbon tzibur? If the entire tzibur is donating.
It is.
Right. At first glance, prove it fast. You say that the Ramban is right, right? We understand totally where the Ramban is coming from and why he's making this suggestion. Right, be'efshar shenomar, right? It makes sense. Because why? What's the logic? Why should this be a carbon of the tzibur?
Because the whole tzibur is donated.
Yeah, right? Who are the owners of this carbon? The owners are the tzibur, right? And the tzibur is made up of all of every Jew, right? We go down the census and everyone's there. So if they all chipped in, so why shouldn't this be this is a carbon from the tzibur, so it should be a carbon tzibur. Right? Ramban makes a lot of sense. Question is, why on earth would... why on earth would we argue? Why on earth would we think that it's not a carbon tzibur if it's being brought by the entire tzibur? Right, that's the question to put out in front. So do you want to propose an answer, or do you want to look at other cases? Move the way. Okay, fine. So that's that'd be case number one, right? The voluntary carbon tzibur. Okay, so case number two. Is another one that we've discussed. It's also been raised in our Gemara, and that is the case of the chatas whose owner dies. Right. So the Mishnah Horios tells us there are five chatos, which if something happens, you have to let the animal die. Right. And one of those is that you have a carbon chatas whose owner dies. If you have a carbon chatas, the owner dies, so you don't bring it, right? If it's an ola, let's say, then the yorshim would bring it. That was, we had the Rav talking about that case where you had the inheritors of a carbon, right? What kind of ownership do the inheritors have on their father's carbon, their mother's carbon? If it's an asham, so then the halacha is you, you're supposed to let it go get a mum. And if it's a chata, so then you don't let it get a mum, you don't bring it, you have to let it die, right? There's no future for this animal. So the Mishnah tells us that even though you have these five categories of chataos who die, they're not all created equal, because they don't all exist for the carb, for the tzibur. So one of the ones that does not exist for the tzibur is the chataos shemesu bahala, right? And the Gemara, and the Mishnah says, why don't you have a chatas whose owners die if it's a chatas of the tzibur? So the reason that we're given is, right, the last three lines are here in Har Yosef Mubeis, is she'in tzibur mesim. Right? The tzibur doesn't die. Okay. So, is this a, what kind of statement is this? The tzibur doesn't die. How do you interpret that?
The tzibur has a status that's beyond that of the individuals that comprise it.
Okay, so that's the Lundish explanation. So if you didn't have Lundish explanation, which we're going to embrace wholeheartedly, what would be other way to understand Shina Tzibur Mesim?
It's not possible for every single person in the tzibur.
Exactly, right? So, right, Raquel's saying a technical interpretation, right, that just not everyone's going to die, right? And Lisa's saying a fundamental explanation that that there's this entity of a tzibur which doesn't die. All right, so we're going to come back to press for more explanation as to what exactly you mean by that. So we have this tosos, right? And by the way, this is, Dani's bringing this proof also, right? Dani Wolf brings this tosos, but you attest to the base. And what did tosos say? Karbanos tibur letibur, perish, af im mesu oso hador, right? Even if that generation that brought the carbon died, so you'll still whoever the survivors, let's say, right? Let's say people who didn't offer machas shekel, right? So let's say we're in the midbar, right? And everyone age 20 and up is dead, right? So we're left with only the 19-year-olds or under. So we're still going to bring this chatas. Why? Why don't we say, right? We've constructed a case where the tzibur died. So Tosa say no, right? Because dor holeich v'dor ba, right? We always have generations coming and going. Which is a bit of a mysterious line Tosas. I'll be honest, I don't really know what Tosas means by quoting this pasuk from Koheles. But what we do know is that they have constructed a hechitimsi for us, right? They have constructed a case where the technical reason is not going to apply, right? Because, right, in the midbar, you could have the adult generation die, right? And only the young the next generation coming in. So then why are we creating this ironclad universal rule of Ein HaTzibur Mesim? So the simplest way to say it is what?
That's what I said.
Right.
The tzibur has a status that's, you know, unique from that of the individual.
Right. The tzibur is beyond the individual. So that's the key idea that we're going to have to kind of explain what it means. Right. So that a tzibur, right, we'll call, let's say, the corporate entity of Klal Yisrael, that's the way Rosenzweig at least likes to call it, right? You have the individuals, and you have the corporate, right? We have this this overall body of Klal Yisrael, right? So we may not look at the tzibur as just a group of individuals, right? We could look at it and say that it's kind of an idea of the sum, you know, it's greater than the sum of its parts, right? That you have all of Klal Yisrael, every individual fused together creates this broader concept called tzibur, right? So if you have a chatas which belongs to the tzibur, all the individuals who donated to buy that carbon have passed away. So why isn't it a chatas shemesu
ba'aleha? Because the tzibur still stands.
Exactly, right? We don't look at it as the individuals who bought that carbon and the individuals who are now no longer alive. The tzibur bought that carbon, right? And the tzibur is still here, right? Ain't that tzibur mesim, right? Klal Yisrael's here to stay. So this idea of the corporate entity of Yisrael, right, would very nicely explain this ironclad principle that you never have a chata shemesu ba'alah because the individuals may die, right? Tosas pointing out that many individuals may die, but the tzibur is not going to. So let's plug that back in. Yeah, Jacob, what's up?
I don't understand. even if like the corporate entity of the tibor is instantiated by the individuals and is more than the individuals, presumably it is sustained by those individuals. So even if, like, on the positive side, you would have, like, things where the sum is greater than just the parts. On the negative side, when you remove the individuals, so to speak, like, how is it that you still have that instantiation?
So let's go back to the Midbar, right? So we have the Jews in the desert, pre-Meraglim, and we have a carbon of the Tzibor. So who is defined as the ownership body of this carbon? The Tzibor, right? Fast forward, right? The Yotzei Mitzrayim are no longer alive. Do we have the Tzibor?
I mean, you call it, you still have the word Tzibor, but it's different. I mean, I would say it's a different...
It's different people, but it still is the body of Tzibor, right? This is the nation of Am Yisrael.
Right. Tzibor is like a meta concept that's not like actually tied down to any meaning. There's no such thing as just a specific tzibor.
It's like the Cleveland Cavaliers. They traded away half their team today, but they're still the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. I mean, if LeBron leaves, we have to revisit that. Are they still the Cavaliers?
No, but there's no such thing as one tzibor. There's just the tzibor or no tzibor. You can't have more tibor.
I don't think so.
If you have a tibor, then you could lose that tibor. Or you could have a different tibor.
Right, right. Klal Yisrael is no more or less Klal Yisrael in the 21st century than it was in the 20th century or the 19th century.
Right.
You've Klal Yisrael. That might be Pshat and Yaakov Avinu Lomeis, right? But maybe.
Sarah's bottom share is still alive. Represent.
would that corporate entity of Am Yisrael, let's say like if there were a case where every single person, even the people that are younger than 20, even the people that haven't contributed, like every single member of Am Yisrael dies, like from every meaning like right now, like every meaning there's no one to continue Am Yisrael, like there's no one to continue and there's no one left. And therefore, like...
Sorry, so you're saying to get really dark for a second, like you're saying if Hitler was...
It's hard not to go there, you know what I mean? Like, it's like...
100%!
I didn't go there.
I thought
it was
going to be honest. But obviously, it's not fair.
Right, so the answer...
Like, does the corporate entity... what's the purpose of talking about the corporate entity of Am Yisrael then? But,
So if we're talking in halachic categories and halachic terms, so then we're talking halachic reality.
Okay.
Right, so what's the answer to that going to be from a halachic reality perspective?
There's no halachic to have, there's no one to perform it. Like,
well, there's a divine promise of that this isn't going to... There's a haftacha that's not going to happen. What?
Is that halacha?
Absolutely.
Okay. It's all the vacuously true. Right?
What?
If you bring a korban tzibor, which you can, then it's a korban tzibor. Yeah, vacuously true.
I suppose. No, but that's what people say. I should have compiled the list of the psukim, which are quoted with Arias Achronis. But the response to that is that, like, Alpi Din. You know, it's not just Alpi.
But then can you ever...
We're talking about Alpi Din. The Tzibor is promised it's not going to happen. So that factors in Talacha. Why wouldn't it factor in Talacha?
I don't know. Yeah. No, because, like, I guess, like, I think of halacha as more, like, is there you wouldn't find, like, in, like, the Shulchan Aruch, that, like, promise that God made to us that...
No, but halacha assumes a permanent and fixed Klal Yisrael.
You're saying it's like
an eternal Klal Yisrael.
Okay.
That's enters halachic reality.
Okay.
Okay, so now let's, right, that corporate entity idea, how can we bring that back to the Machlokas in Rashi and Ramban? About the Ola, where everyone volunteers to chip in.
Because the Shiftim is just the individual or the Tzibor.
Exactly, right? Here's a case where it may be brought by all the individuals, but there needs to be some mechanism which lets me, how do I cross the bridge? We say that the Tzibor transcends the individual. Right, so how do we get from point A to point B? How do we get from point A, where the whole, every Tom, Dick, and Jane is chipping in, to universal Klal Yisrael. So you can do that with Machatzis HaShekel because the Torah is defining this as the money of the Tzibur, right? This now becomes Tzibur funds, and this now becomes Tzibur Karbanos. But if you're not operating through any pre-existing mechanism, so it's like money laundering, Lahavdil, right? You know, we can launder through Machatzis HaShekel, we can turn Mamon Yachin into Mamon Tzibur, right? But through voluntary contribution, there's no mechanism to make money of the individuals into money of the Tzibur. You just have the money of many, 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 all individuals, right? But the Tzibur is greater than the sum of its parts. So just because you have the sum of its parts doesn't necessarily mean that you have the Tzibur. Okay, so those are proofs one and two. This leads very nicely into proof number three. I'm just trying to like kind of overwhelm with proofs that this concept exists. And then we can look at a couple of cases where we have to struggle with that. So this is a great one. Do you see the Mishnah in Shkalim?
Yeah.
So it is a lot of fun, right? So what's the machlokas in the Mishnah in Shkalim? It's even more fun if you remember that all the Kohanim at the end of Bayis Sheni were like these corrupt, rich, aristocratic tzedukim.
That goes to our argument, Raquel, about whether there could possibly be chametz in the Azara.
Oh,
yeah. Was like, how could there be chametz in the Azara? I was like, Raquel, there's probably a lot of chametz in the Azara.
Oh, yeah. They weren't even keeping Pesach on the right day half the time. I mean, there's this, yeah.
Me,
what?
A lot of that stuff.
Not good.
Then Raquel was trying to figure out, like, what could this possibly be talking about then? Because it can't possibly be talking about.
What if you're
right. No, it's interesting you raise that because
theoretically we're talking about a situation where there shouldn't be coming to the Azara. So I don't think it's like crazy for me to think like what are they talking about?
Totally. No, I never thought of this before. Now that you raised it, I don't know much about this, but there was a huge debate, and you guys know more than me, and it could be because I never really read the book that you guys got me the first year. You got me that ancient Jewish history. There was some book about ancient history. There's a menorah in the front of it. I still got to read it when I get the chance. But there was a massive debate between Jewish sects and Bayis Sheni as to how the calendar worked.
Huge. Well, I mean, the Essenes didn't. They didn't have like a leap year at all.
Everything was always
on the same day of the week.
Exactly. Yes. Right. They had Pesach falling out on a Thursday, I think, just like it had in the year of Yetzias Mitzrayim.
Yeah.
So, and there's like solar calendar involved. I don't remember the details. But basically, there were many years where it seems like the Beis Hamikdash was not keeping the holidays in when the Prushim wanted them to be doing so. So it could have maybe actually been kind of nice of Chametz Pesach. I don't know. But that's not my feel. But just mentioning that threw it into my mind. But anyway, Mishnah and Shkalim. So what's going on here? This great, really funny machlokas between the Kohanim and Riocham ben Zakkai. Right, so we're in Yavne, right? We're in the Beis Hamikdash in Yavne. This is after the Chorban. And then we're trying to recollect the Masoras. So Ben Bukhri makes a comment, right? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Heyed Ben Bukhri B'Yavne, Kol Kohen Sheshokel, Eino Chote. Any Kohen who's Shokel, what does it mean, Shokel?
Gives
Machatzis HaShekel, he has not sinned. So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai says, what do you mean? If he gives it, he hasn't sinned. Right? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, lo. Ella Kol Kohen Sheino Shokel Chote, right? If you don't pay the Machatzis HaShekel, you have sinned, right? Kohanim have to give Machatzis HaShekel, just like everyone else. So where are the Kohanim coming from? Why do they think that they don't have to pay Machatzis HaShekel? El Shakonim Dorshin Mikra Zeh La'atzma. Right, the Kohanim make up this drasha for themselves. And what do they say? V'chol Minchas Kohen Kalil Tiyeh Lo Sochal. Right, any mincha which a Kohen brings has to be entirely burnt. Right, normally how much of a mincha is burnt and how much of it is eaten? Just the kometz is burnt, so the vast majority of it's going to be eaten. Right. So if you were a Kohen and you wanted a lunch, so you could say, okay, great, I'll have like a freebie carbon, right? I'll be from and I'll make a mincha, and then, right, I'll like sprinkle a little bit of flour in the mizbeach, and then I'll have a good lunch for myself, but I'll say that I brought a carbon. So that doesn't work, because if a Kohen offers a voluntary mincha, it is all burnt on the mizbeach. So what did the Kohanim say? They gave a very from argument, very clever argument. Said, right, Rechman al-Etzlan, if we give Machatzis HaShekel, So every single mincha that's ever brought by the tzibur, what's its status going
to
be?
Going to have to be burned.
Yeah, nebuchadnezzar, mincha's kohen, and that's a disaster. We don't want that to happen. So we will restrain ourselves, right? We won't donate the machtz to shekel, and therefore the menachos brought by the tzibur will not be considered a mincha's kohen, and we won't have any problems of mincha's kohen being bought with kamil funds. Right?
Our argument was with regards to the mishnah from menachot, but it could apply here too.
But
it goes back to your faith in the kohanim.
Why is this like a nebuch for anyone but the kohanim themselves, though?
Well, what are the examples which are brought here in the mishnah? Right, so Rabbi Yochanan quote which types of mincha are going to be eaten, and
they're all eaten by the kohanim, so it would literally only be the kohanim.
Right, it would cost the kohanim. It would there's a mitzvah to eat them, right? So they wouldn't be able to fulfill the mitzvah of eating lachem upon him.
Oh, so the mitzvah is like they're saying that.
I would imagine so. Yeah, I don't know if they're right. It's not just we want a full belly. Let's say we have the Heilige Mitzvah of Achilas Lachem Apanim, so we're not going to pay the Machzor Shekel. Okay, so the question is, like, they have a good point, or they seem to have a good point. Now, what's the answer going to be, right? How are we going to assume the rejection to the Kohanim is going to be? Exactly. Who are the owners of the Shteilacha? Who owns the Shteilacha? Right, the tzibur is the owners of the shteilachem. So do you look at it and say, you have Yisrael, right? There's a diverse. We have Yisraelim in the shteilachem, and we have Leviim in the shteilachem, and we have Kohanim in the shteilachem, and we have Geirim in the shteilachem. Or do we say it's a homogeneous single entity which owns the shteilachem? It is a carbon of the tzibur, right? So if we say it's a carbon of the tzibur, then just because the Kohen's involved, that's not going to... He paid, but that doesn't make it his carbon. It's the carbon of the tzibur. So what does the Yerushalmi say? Right? In Shkalim, we don't have Bavli, but since it's in Seder Moed, they print the Bavli next to Maseches... they print the Yerushalmi next to Maseches Pesachim. So the Yerushalmi elaborates, and the Yerushalmi says that this is the same halacha as Chatas tzibur. Right, that just like there's no such halacha as chatas tzibur mesa, so too there's no such halacha as a mincha of the tzibur being burnt as a mincha of the kohanim. Right, just like if the tzibur dies, the chatas is still brought. So too, if you have a carbon brought by the whole tzibur, including kohanim, it's not considered minchas kohanim, and it's not going to be burnt. So that's very vague, because what on earth is the connection between chatas tzibur? Between chatas shemesu ba'aleha, right, a chatas whose owners die, and a mincha, who's partially bought by kohanim. What do those two have to do with each other? Right? So, if you didn't have our concept, the answer would be very difficult. It would seem like they had nothing to do with each other. Once we're saying that this is all about this corporate entity of Klal Yisrael, it actually works beautifully. Right? It makes a ton of sense to put these together, because there's one idea operating in both of these realms. The reason why the chatas of the tzibur doesn't die is because we say that Klal Yisrael doesn't die, right? And the reason why the mincha brought by the whole tzibur is not burnt, because Kohanim paid for some of it, is because it's not a mincha of the Kohanim plus Yisraelim and Leviim, it's a mincha of the tzibur. Okay, yeah, question.
This year with like this whole corporate entity idea, like specifically with regards to the carbon tzibur, because we kind of saw it with the Kohen Gadol, the office of the Kohen Gadol also. Like, that's sort of the same type of thing, no? It's like, is it like a separate chiddush here?
What do you mean by the office of the Kohen Gadol?
Remember we talked about at the end of Shkia last week, like, the office of the Kohen Gadol, meaning if a Kohen, like, dies mid-carbon, then possibly another Kohen can pick it up, because it just, like, belongs to the office of the Kohen Gadol, because the Kohen Gadol has to do the Avodah Yom Kippur, like, therefore, like, it's not like the person, but just like this...
Yeah, you're right. Excellent. Right, the same. It's not the same thing, obviously, but you're saying the same conceptual structure is operating.
Yes.
Right, where we have a kind of broader umbrella which transcends, which individuals are part of, but that transcends the individuals.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Excellent. Awesome. Okay, so that's...
It's just the whole in the sum of the parts, no?
What?
It's just like the whole in the sum of the parts. It's the whole grid in the sum of the parts. Have you instantiated something beyond?
Yeah, that's right, exactly. Another mashal for that. Okay, so that's proof number... That's proof number three. Proof number four. Closely related. This is the one that the Achronim talk about the most. Is the question of carbon musaf, right? So chiyav nashim b'karban for carbon musaf, chiyav nashim b'tfilas musaf, right? So what's the chiyav of nashim in tfila, generally speaking?
Some sort of
chiyav. What does Shulchan Aruch say? And then the post comes to a lot of time dealing with. Right, nashim avadim al pishav turim kriyashma chayavim b'tfila. Right, women are obligated in tefila just as men are. V'neishi himitzas hasei shalo hazman gram. Right, it's not a time bound positive commandment. So then the question is, right, why is it not a time bound positive commandment? Don't we have to daven 3 times a day? So that sounds pretty hasei shalom gram to me. So why isn't tefila mitzas hasei shazman gram if you have to daven 3 times a day? So, right, the answer of the Rambam has this radical chiddush that there's mitzvah midoraisa to daven, and that mitzvah is just a daily mitzvah, right? Once a day, and then midorabanan, we set up that's instantiated into 3 different tefillos, right? That's the answer of the Rambam. If you think that, do you know who argues with the Rambam about tefillah midoraisa most prominently?
Rambam,
right? What does Rambam say?
Midorabanan.
Does he say that tefillah is always midorabanan, do you know?
Ace
Ratzon, close, I think. Not quite Ace Ratzon. Ace Tsar, right? Ace, there's a mitzvah to pray during Ace Tsar Midoraisa, but otherwise there's not.
But by the Shulchan Aruch, like Tefillah, means like Shmon Asri, right? Like it's not the same.
Yeah.
It's not like the Rambam. Like when Shulchan Aruch uses it, it's not. It's different than the Rambam, right? Or you would say it's.
I guess, happens to be, I put it in brackets here, but the Tzlach, which is the Nodi Behuda, says that, you know, in Prague, so many women are not saying Shmon Esrei every day. So he says, yeah, because the core mitzvah is just to daven once a day, and so when you wake up, you say Moda Ani, bang, you fulfilled your Chiyuv Tefila Midoraisa. So in terms of how it's performed, you're totally right that we're referring to Shmon Esrei. Theoretically, it very potentially could be fulfilled with much less than that.
The Rambam explicitly says it's just, you know, like a tchina when you're after Netilat Yadayim.
Right. He says that, where does he say that?
In Mishtar?
Oh, awesome. Cool. Which I did not actually look up.
Yeah, so, presumably, Shulchan Aruch.
No, isn't that
the... Oh, is that... The Magen Avraham quotes the Rambam saying that. No?
Yeah,
you're totally right. You're right. Right, midoraisa died b'pam echad once a day with any text you want.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I wasn't even. I mixed up the Tzlach and the Magen Avraham. And the Magen Avraham said, yeah, right, forget about Prague in the 1700s. In Magen Avraham's time, they're not, right? You say Modani and then you're good to go. Right, 100%.
In
okay.
Girls' schools, you should know, we learn this so yeah, like every year.
Yeah,
the whole thing. In boys' schools? Never learned it once.
Yeah.
Like
since seventh grade.
Yeah, since seventh grade.
Oh yeah. It depends on how right.
Good. So then you know Rabbi Kiva. Then you knew Rabbi Kiva Eger.
Yeah. No. Yes.
Yeah. We did. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll go.
Remember Rabbi Zach?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was ninth grade.
So this is a great year, Rabbi Kiva Eger. That's not good. So what does he say? Well, first of all,
that women are putter from Musa. Because they don't have to pay the
Makafita
check.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Do you know who he's quoting here?
Simon Rosh.
Yeah, who's the Simon Rosh?
So the Simon Rosh, what?
It's a great name.
It is a great name. So the Simon Rosh was published as Discovered Chuvos of the Rosh, which is very exciting because I think it was discovered around Ricky Baker's time. So like late 1700s, early 1800s maybe. So that's great, right? 300 years after the rush, 500 years after the rush passed today, we have new Chuvas the Rush.
Cool.
The only problem is that it turns out it was fake, and it's a fascinating story to look up later. But so he gets quoted, but he was a gaon atzum, but he wasn't actually the rush. But he gets quoted in halachic literature, and that's what's fascinating, because like we're quoting these Chuvas, which are a forgery. So what kind of status they have? Because sometimes they're really good and interesting halachic arguments.
he was writing in the mid-18th century, Sunrush.
Yeah.
It's like way after.
Yeah, and then the guy, he ends up in England, and he's like wandering around. He's clearly, he was a troubled man and a brilliant man. So Ruki Vager and his Haggai here quotes Sunrush. In the Tshuva he writes, he says this independently. So like he really, really passes this way. Right, and again, that women are pater from davening musaf because women are pater from giving the machzis hashakal. Okay, so what does one have to do with the other? How do we get from not giving carbon a machzis hashakal to not being obligated to daven musaf?
Because tefillah represents carbon
and
that connection.
Right. So why not shachar smilcha or ma'arif? Or why not shachar smilcha, which come from the carbon tamid?
Does the tamid come out of the
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't think of that. I don't know.
Well,
apparently it says
Ve'in
Lachid, like the
carbon
of Tzibor. I don't know if that's like different.
The Tamid
Tzibor.
Tamid's, yeah, the primary carbon
Tzibor. Oh, the
Tzibor
is also the
Tzibor. What?
Well, that sounds like also Musaf, no? In that line. Oh, yeah, I guess there's no other.
Right, so Rabbi Vager is saying, like, this, my comment here is not halacha l'maisa, because even though al pidin there's a p'tur for Musaf, but they, right, they've nagu l'spal, right, it's become authoritative through the vehicle of minhag. But so Rabbi Vager seems to be assuming a difference between shachas or mincha and Musaf. This is a total aside, but.
That the Musaf only had, no.
So Shachras and Mincha, you have two tracks of Chiyuv, and in Musaf, there's only one.
There's only Tzibor with Musaf.
Right. What's the basis for Tefillah? What's the basis for Shachras, Mincha, and Mara? Exactly. Right? So we could say that even if you don't have the Tamid track available, you still have the Avos track available. But Musaf, there's no Avos track. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that could explain that difference. But what do we think of Riki Vager's assumption here? Which is, right, he's saying if anybody who doesn't pay machzis hashakal doesn't have a chelek in carbon tzibur, does that work with what we're setting up or not?
Not really, unless women are a part of the tzibur.
Exactly. Exactly, right? Why not?
Because, like, it shouldn't matter who contributes. If like everyone's part of the tzibur, then it doesn't matter who gives.
Exactly. If the tzibur transcends the individual, right? So then, who cares? This is the exact case as this is the kohanim with the machzis hashakal, right over here, right? Where the kohanim paying machzis hashakal or not paying a machzis hashakal doesn't make it their mincha, right? So too, women paying machzis hashakal, women not paying machzis hashakal, doesn't affect whether or not it's their musaf, because the musaf doesn't belong to men or women, it belongs to tzibur. So most people argue with Riki Vager, and if you agree with Riki Vager, you're going to get to some really radical positions, right? Because play it out. We can do this one of two ways. We can play it out in terms of tefillah, we can play it out in terms of carbon tzibur, right? So which direction? Should we look on the tefillah side, how it gets very difficult, or look on the carbon side, how it gets very difficult? Either way, we could ask major questions.
Let's do the side.
Okay. So who has to pay the machzis hashakal?
Men above 20.
Men, right, above 20, and?
No,
60. I think 60, right? Men 20 to 60. So we're going to have a halacha that if you're going to daven musaf for the tzibur, you have to be between age 20 and 60, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, open up, you know, Shulchan Aruch, when we talk about Yom Narayim and the Chazan for Yom Narayim,
and he's
married, elderly, yeah. A nice beard, so it's never going to be me, right, good, thick, white beard, until he turns 60, and then, right, so he better whiten his beard prematurely, because otherwise he's out,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
and no, we're going to invent the halacha, we're going to say that you know, until you turn, it's not enough to be bar mitzvah. Actually, you're not chayvin, right? The bar mitzvah boy, always, right? Not always. I didn't do it because my parsha was 236 seconds long. We have the mitzvah boy who davens, who lanes, then he stays up in the yamid to daven musaf. So we're going to tell him, yo, buddy, right? 7 more years, right? You haven't made it yet?
At my uncle's kollel in L.A., bar mitzvah boys don't lean b'shita. It's bittul Torah.
What do you mean bittul Torah?
The Rosh Hashiva thinks that it's a waste of time for the bar mitzvah boys
to learn
leaning?
Huh.
Yeah, which is weird.
What?
So they just give a really, really, like...
Never heard of that.
And they never
heard
of
that.
I feel like it has to do with Kavod HaTzibur also. Like,
yeah, then they
those, like, money. Elements of, like, who's going to die in for everyone. Like, because when you're worried about, like, the Katan or the Isha or anyone, like, getting an Aliyah, that's, like, all Kavod HaTzibur.
But this person doesn't fall into the...
We're talking, you know, the 75-year-old, you know, man, right? The senior, the rabbi emeritus of the shul... And one thing he's still going to do is Yidamas Musaf on Rosh Hashanah, right? So we're going to... Have we ever heard of such a thing?
No.
Unheard of, right? And I'm going to rather talk about it, Shachar, talk about it. Where, so that's the problem you're going to run into on the Tila side. Probably going to run into on the carbon side. So what are some carbonos seaboard that we discussed in Mesachas Yoma? Critical Yom Kippur carbonos. One in particular. Sarim HaShaleach, right? What is the Sarim HaShaleach? What does it do? Yeah, it's mechaber for everyone. So we're going to have a little asterisk on the Sarmah Shaleach. That's what he asks it, right? You know, Kohen Gadol says vidui for all Klal Yisrael, right? He first is vidui for himself, then is vidui for the Kohanim, and then vidui for all Klal Yisrael. Asterisk, right? Only men between 20 and 60 who paid the half shekel? Very, very difficult, right? So that's why most Dachronim try to get around and argue with Ruki Vager. And we'll do so, saying exactly what our point is, right? That paying or not paying Machzor Shekel does not affect your relationship to the carbon seaboard, because regardless of whether or not you pay, all that matters is whether you're part of the seaboard or not, right?
Rabbi Akiva, your follow through with that logic for all those cases that we just discussed?
Probably not.
I have no idea. He talks about it in this little comment on Shulchan Aruch, and it's like a mini paragraph and a very long tshuva he has on the question of should we spend our, this gives an indication of how expensive they were, right? We have money we could spend on lulav and etrog, or we can spend it on tefillin. What should we spend the money on? Right. So nowadays you could buy lulav and etrog for $50, and tefillin costs $1,000. But back then, lulav and etrog were $1,000 too, right? So in that context of which, so he's trying in that tshuva he's trying to prove that the most important thing is frequency. So he says you should get the tefillin because tefillin are the most frequently purchased item. And then he wants to say that's why if you have a choice between davening musaf and davening mincha, you're supposed to daven mincha first. But there might be a second reason why you daven mincha first, because maybe the maybe. Yeah, I mean, I was a little
does it matter that you
in the weeds, but what do you mean in the end card?
Like you have two proofs for it, kind of versus Musaf. You only have one.
What do you mean? Which proofs?
Because you were saying, like, we have two reasons for Mincha.
Right.
Right, and only one for Musaf. So
right.
Maybe that's why you give Mincha priority.
Oh, interesting. So I think he's quoting the Gemara. The Gemara there says that you would daven mincha first because it's more frequent.
Right.
So the question, so what he raises is that what about, there's a concept of shavel akol, right? If you have one mitzvah which everyone is obligated in and one mitzvah which not everyone is obligated in, so the one that everyone is obligated in comes first. So he's trying to prove that the important factor is frequency and not universality. So he says, hey, the musaf, women are patarin, and mincha, women are chayavin. Nonetheless, the reason we highlight is not universality, but rather it's frequency, right? So since we see from mincha versus musaf that the key issue is frequency, so too when it comes to lulav and esrog versus tefillin, which is equally universal, right? It's mitzvah on both are mitzvahs on men. So we would say that the key factor is frequency, and therefore you should get your tefillin instead of your... instead of your lulav and esrog. So that's what's going on in the tshuva. Okay, fine. So Ad Kan, Rabbi Akiva Vager, parenthetically, the other, if we don't except Rabbi Akiva Eger, but we do say that women are Patra and Musaf. So what's the other reason we give why women are Patra and Musaf? Do you know? It was covered in high school.
I don't know.
So that's the Nodi Behuda. Nodi Behuda says because it's a mitzvah saseh shesvan grama.
Oh.
Right? It's, you know, we only have it whenever we have it. I couldn't you say that, the you know, if you get into the details, shachris, mincha, and marav are mitzvah saseh shesvan grama?
Yeah.
Right? The mitzvah, the fundamental mitzvah to daven could be midah reisa, but the times are midah rabbanan. If you assume that mitzvah saseh shesvan grama applies to drabanan as well as the reisas.
When so, you say the zmanim, women don't have to abide by those things.
Do we say that?
In the same way. No, we don't say that.
So why not? So why? How can we pater women from musaf because of mitzvah seishas on grama, but you have to keep the zmanim for shachar smicha marav? So Yehuda says, well, even though shachar smicha marav are time-bound, he says, they're abundant, we're machayev everybody in those as well, because they're rachameh. Right, Rachamim Ninhu, which the Gemara raises, right, that you know, everyone would want to daven for Rachamim, but Musaf is not Rachamim, right? Musaf is the Dafkan of Rachamim, right? There's no no Bakasha in Musaf. So, Nodi Behuda argues that that's the difference between Musaf and the other tefillos. Not, you know, whether we're talking about Karban Tzibur, or, you know, Karban Machas Shekel, like Rabbi Akiva Eger, rather has to do with whether there's rachamei or not, which determines whether or not there's a patur of mitzvah saseh shesvan grama. Okay, so that's proof number four, right? So again, for the corporate entity idea, so we have Rashi versus Ramban about the voluntary, oh goodness, voluntary donation of the tzibur, right? We have the inat tzibur mesim, that's number two. We have the fact that the kohanim's donation to machas shekel does not make this a minchas kohen. That's number three. And now we have the fact that not only men between 20 and 60 get kapara from karbanos tzibur, right? And that's because that kapara goes to the tzibur. It doesn't just go to the individuals who offered the half shekel. Okay. So now the last proof from Rav Tani is our case of lo tishchet chametz al dam zivchi, right? So what's the halacha here? What halacha are we talking about? What does that mean?
Like having, being in possession of chametz, either during the Karban Pesach or during the Tamid on the Erev.
Yeah, so that's what, right. So that's Rabbi Huda, right? So the Chachamim say that what's the core halacha? That you can't own chametz. When can't you own chametz?
When during the shechting of the Karban Pesach.
When the shechting of the Karban Pesach, right. Another halacha where the shechita of the Karban Pesach is the really important avoda, right? In general, zrika is the important avoda, but for Karban Pesach, shechita is the important avoda because Karban Pesach is all about eating, right? So that's why the avoda which allows consumption is a critical one. So so you're not allowed to own chametz when your Karban Pesach is brought. So Rabbi Yehuda says that it's not only owning chametz when the Karban Pesach is brought, but it's also owning chametz when right, there's one other carbon of the tzibur that's brought in the afternoon of Erev Pesach, which is once tamid, right? Because the afternoon is when you're not allowed to own own chametz anymore. So the tamid shavein rabbayim is brought in the afternoon, early in the afternoon, so that they had time to bring all their Karban Pesach, right? So that there's machlokas there between the chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda, right? Are you not allowed to shecht the Karban Pesach when one of the owners has chametz, or are you also not allowed to shecht the tamid when one of the owners has chametz? So Reish Lakish and Riochanan argue for Karban Pesach, do you have to be present? Right? Does the owner of the chametz have to be present in the azara for there to be an iser triggered or not? Right? So Reish Lakish says yes, and Riochanan says no. Right? Reish Lakish says, even if no one's home, right? Even if the chametz owner is far away, if he's part of the chabura that is bringing a Karban Pesach, and one of the members of the chabura has chametz, even if he's not here, it still will be aser to shecht this Karban Pesach. So the question is, what about a Karban Tamid, right? So the Kohen is shechting the Karban Tamid, and there's some Jew somewhere who has chametz, right? So Tosa say, the only machlokas, if you have to be there, the only machlokas is about Karban Pesach, right? But there's no way on earth that we would say that the Karban Tamid, if some Jew somewhere owns chametz, there's no way we're going to say that's going to create an iser of shachting this Karban Tamid at a time where one of the owners owns chametz. Does that make sense? Okay, so Sfas Emes says it makes no sense. Right? Why is there no way that there would be an iser on the Kohen to shach the Karban Tamid just because one of the owners of it owns chametz? Why should there be no iser?
Because if there's shogeg or nonis, then we solve our problem of someone else having.
Right. So let's get into the practicals, right? So what does this look like? What does this case look like? So the Kohen's ready to shecht the sheep. Little does he know, right, that down in a lot, right, Yendrel the Shmendrick never got rid of his chametz, right? So he didn't know that. So he, because it's impossible to know whether every single Jew in Eretz Yisrael has got rid of their chametz or not. So Tos say, because no Jew, since we can't know, Tos don't say this, but we would assume this, right? This would be the kashrut shot. Since we can't tell that every single Jew got rid of their chametz, there's no way that it's us or to shach the Karban Tamid just because some Jew somewhere owns chametz. So Sfas Emes asks, well, we have halacha categories for cases where there's no way to get around the nisr. And what are those halacha categories called? I think you said them a second ago.
Shogeg
and Onis. So we don't need a special halacha that, right, a special hutra allowing slaughter of the Tamid, even if one of the owners owns chametz. We'll just fall back on the standard halacha, right? Ones rachman apatre, and the Kohen will be exempt, right? Okay, it'll turn out in the newspapers that somebody didn't get rid of their chametz for our Pesach. Fine, the Kohen was ones, not going to blame him, move on. Why is it so obvious to Tosfos that this iser fundamentally can't apply? Right, that's the Sfas Emes' question. So given our construct, how could we potentially answer?
Because it's a matter of one person has chametz, just the tzibur bringing that.
Exactly. What's the difference between Karban Pesach and Karban Tamid? And it sets up, we'll talk about next week. But
Pesach's a yachid and Tamid's a
tzibur. Exactly, right? He's not one of the owners, right? We have, you know, how many Jews living in Israel these days? 6.5 million or something, right? So we don't have 6.5 million, owners of the Tamid. We have one owner of the Tamid. It's called Tzibur, right? You are a part of the Tzibur, but you're not one of the co-owners. It's not a carbon of Shutvin, it's a carbon of Tzibur, right? And so that's why, definitionally, you could not have an Isser of shachting the Tamid, the Chametz, of shachting the carbon Tamid if one of the owners has Chametz. You only violate the Isser, potentially, if the Shochet himself owns chametz, right? Because then the person who's doing the avoda, or the zori. Yeah.
So it's only if those two people could ruin it. So every other person.
I guess so. So we're saying, we would say for Rabbi Yehuda that liyitzuyer, every single Jew kept their chametz, except for the kohen who's doing the tamid shel bein harabayim, so he wouldn't do anything wrong in this setup.
If there's really
at the end, we probably won't have time, but Rashi would argue. But
like in all of the examples, there's no way really to break Tzibur. It's like a concept that exists no matter if it doesn't actually, like it's not actually happening.
What do you mean not actually happening?
Once we form the Tzibur, even if like a majority is not actually doing what we say the Tzibur is doing, the Tzibur still exists.
Yeah, so that's a great question. Spoiler at the end, Rashi is going to say that if we assume that Rov of the Tzibur has gotten rid of the chametz. So you could ask that, you could go either way, probably, potentially, on your question. All right, you could say that, you know, the Tzibur still relates to the individual, so if we don't have Rov of the Tzibur, then this can't work anymore, right? Or you could say, we're going to really double down and say that it's fundamentally independent. So you could say both ways. Very good.
Is the kapara that the Tzibur gets from the Korban Tzibur then only applicable to, like, certain types of like things that the Tzibur did, but not things like individuals in the Tzibur did. I mean, like no individual kept any type of kapara.
That was our question. Yeah. We asked the question when we read the Rav. Like it's kind of like exclusionary of like if
Like the Rav said that, like, if all, every single carbon on Yom Kippur is a carbon Tzibur, then, like, we ask the same question of, like, okay, so is there no individual Kamara on Yom Kippur according to that?
Right, so he took...
No, with the Schutzman model, it works, right?
Yes. The question you have to... What is... What you're asking is, what does... Right, the Rav talks about the kapara for the tzibur. So what does kapara for the tzibur look like for an individual? Right? How does an individual relate to national kapara?
Yeah, especially in light of the fact that, like, with chametz, you see that, like, there's really no... Like, the tzibur is not only... above, like, the individual, it's separate from the individual.
I would say transcends the individual.
Okay, yeah, transcends. Right.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, the kapara, yeah, you know, let's hold off for, yeah. The core question, kapara becomes, like, how does, in kapara, at some point, there has to be, like, a landing, right? Like, the kapara of the tzibur presumably impacts every individual Jew. So what exactly does that look like? But he never explains, so I'm not sure theologically what that means. I don't know. You could propose that there's, like, kapara from national calamities and kapara, you know, protection against national punishments and protection against individual punishments, but that's totally me speculating. I don't think he ever tells you what kapara sat sibor and kapara sat yachad look like. He just tells you that they exist. Okay, we're not up to that one yet. Okay, so Ad Kan, the proofs of that Rav Dani brought. So just a couple of quick hits from Tzafnas Paneach. Tzafnas Paneach, who is the Regesh HaVergon. Anything about the Regesh HaVergon?
Yeah.
What do you know about the Regesh HaVergon?
I told him the story that's really
from Dvinsk.
It was from Dvinsk, cool.
He learned with Rav Chaim from the Beis Halevi. That's what it says.
He didn't cut his hair because he didn't want to take his keep off.
He had photographic memory.
Yeah. Better way to say it was that he didn't have the ability to forget.
What?
Yeah. So he was like a hyper genius. And if you open his,
are you laughing because you think you have the story?
What's the story?
Time to tell the story.
Okay. Basically, my brother told me this. That one time he was teaching his students, and they got their tosos, and he said, "It's like a really bad tosos. I don't like it. Rip it out of your Gemara." And the student's like, "But Rebbe, what about the stuff on the other side of the page?" And he said, "Oy la rasha, oy la shchena."
Nice. So I hope you didn't, like, spend any time working on it. But if you just look, I put on the source quotes, like, what his stuff looks like. It's impenetrable, because all it is a series of marmakombos, right? He Ayn. It's on it for you?
Yeah, you
didn't. After Piskei Tosas.
We don't have any of that.
Did I send you the wrong one? Oh,
shoot. Did I send...
No, I sent the wrong one. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
I also heard, like, he knew that the what was it, the Gemara, yeah, in the Taras, the forgery, was a forgery?
Yes, the Yerushalmi Kachin.
Yeah, Yerushalmi Kachin, because he said that in every Masechta there's someone that doesn't come up in any other Masechta but that one, and that one had no one knew. So I was trying to find out if that was true.
I
only heard Rebecca was, like, the only one who was apparently said that.
I responded to your post.
I've only heard
that, you?
Before we knew each other.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so funny.
This guy who taught Talmud here, Ari Bergman, paid, I forgot who it was. Someone in Bnei Brak, who has a kolel, who's, like, mm-hmm, a descendant of someone, but I can't figure out. And the kolel is just named, like, that person's kolel, and it's just, like, his descendant, like, knocked on this guy's door,
okay,
because he's too Talmud here. He's like, "Can I have money?" He's like, "Yeah, here's a ton of money." He's like, "But I need you to do this one thing for me." Find the name of every single, like, new Amora who comes up, or Tana, what is it? I think it's
Amora. Rabbi.
Rabbi,
yeah,
who
I think
comes up.
Member of Chazal,
like,
I think.
Give,
yeah,
me every name. And so he came back to him with the names. I emailed him on your post, but he didn't email me the names. And then on one of the Masechtas, it was like Machlokas Rashi Tosos about the Girsa. And if you went by, like, one of them, it was a new, like, the Masechta did have a new name, and if you went by the other one.
I mean, it gets really good. You get a little period. It gets very complicated because a lot of names are move around in some of the manuscripts. So,
yeah.
Yeah. We had that happen at Tosos today, actually. Where two different Tosos refer to a bottle of Tosos by a different name. So, yeah, it totally happens. Anyway, the Raga Shaver, my grandfather was close with him. In Dvinsk, he did a lot with him.
Cool.
Very cool.
You're in Dvinsker?
Yeah, Riga, actually.
What?
Riga.
Riga.
Yeah, which is... Raga Shaver was from... From Riga, originally.
Someone just translated but his works.
Which ones? He has a ton of works.
I forgot. They translated
and they're all
some
impossible.
Body, and it's like a really random person.
Uh-huh.
He's not, he's like a lawyer in like Toronto or something like that. It just can't, it's like a blue book. It's called Raga Shaver God. And that's probably another thing about the key books in the introduction. Like,
did they say that?
The person didn't want to take off his kippa, so he never cut his hair.
Interesting. Okay. Anyway, so there's like this whole, so he... The Frankel Rambam's quote, he all over his commentary on the Rambam was very into this idea and just quotes like a million different proofs for it. I got exhausted going through them, so I just put two of the clearer ones on here. One is this Rambam in Shkalim, or the first Rambam in Shkalim. He made it. It's a great point. The Rambam at the very end of Shkalim. I sent by the new source quotes, which should be there. I apologize. So one is Rambam and Shkalim, where the Rambam says, can you pay your half shekel on the installment plan?
Can you what?
Can you pay your half shekel on the installment plan? Right, so I'll pay, you know, a tenth of a shekel today and a tenth of a shekel tomorrow, right, and eventually I'll work my way up to a half shekel.
No, it's not
the point.
Sorry?
No. No, you're, I mean, you're right.
It's not the point, like, especially if you're trying to count for the army or something. It's not the point.
Right? Oh, you're saying it has to be like a single coin.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so I guess there are other ways you could explain this one. It's maybe not the most ironclad of proofs, but what he assumes, I think, because all he says is, "Look at the Marmakam. This proves the idea." So it's totally reconstructing what he's thinking. That's what you always have to do with him. Which why, if you don't know the concept, it's very hard to, you know, like here I know the concept, so he gives me the proofs, then I can figure out how the proof proves the concept. But if I don't know the concept, and all I have is the proof. So then, like, how do I reconstruct his lumnus just from a gemara he gave me and nothing else? I don't know, because that's why I'm not a goan. So the Rambam Paskin is that you cannot pay the hamachas shekel on the installment plan. So that makes a lot of sense in our construct, because once you pay the money to the tzibur, is it your money anymore? It's gone, right? It's like last week I was at the laundromat and I put a quarter in the machine and it didn't work, right? So that quarter is gone. Right? It's the same thing here, right? You put your quarter into the machas shekel machine, it's not yours anymore, right? So you could put quarter after quarter in. It's not, you know, you adding up your share in the carbon tzibur, right? You take your half shekel, and the mitzvah is to give that to tzibur. But once you give it, you haven't given it anymore, in a sense, right? So you can give it all in one shot, and then you've given it. But since it's not yours anymore, once you've given it, it now belongs to tzibur, if you give it in the installment plan, the mitzvah is not going to work. I'm pretty sure that's the proof he's drawing from the Rambam and Shkalim that he quoted you. And then this one is just like showing off. This is like doing crossover dribbles just because it looks good. He quotes the Piskei Tosfos. It's great to know what the Piskei Tosfos are. Piskei Tosfos are actually amazing for Chazara. It's, you know, like when you finish Masechta and you have like that kind of random page of stuff in the Bavli at the end. So a lot of that is Piskei Tosfos, where somebody, I think it's like a late Rishon, just summarized Psakim of Tosos and Masechta in order of Perek, and it's like bullet pointed. So it's actually a lot of great to go through. So he digs up a Piskei Tosos, Erechin, Perek Aleph, Psak, Chaf, which is Hamocher Davar Latzibor, Heve Kimatana Ve'in Bo Chelek Od. Once you've sold something to the Tzibor, you no longer have a portion in it. So people talk about this, for example, let's say somebody was made a neder against Hanah from something, one of those kind of cases. But he's saying that once you've given something to the tzibur, you have no chelek in it at all. So it's like almost a fairish, right? It was a beferish piskei tosos, this idea that we've been talking about until now, is the Raga Shaver discovered lying in here. Okay. And then, so that's proof number what? Seven, and then proof number eight is the Rav's proof from Alachuva, right? So you guys saw Alachuva, right? So what's the Rav's proof from Alachuva? What's he talking about there? Yeah, right. A good carbon for us to know about this year. And what about it? Well, there's a problem in the Rambam, right? Because the Rambam Hilchos Tshuva says that the Sar HaMashaleach, if you don't do tshuva, so do you get kapara if you didn't do tshuva from the Sar HaMashaleach?
I don't remember, but I'm going to guess yes, based on our principle.
Yes. Yeah, you get tshuva for Chiyuv Malkos and below. So that's kind of astounding. How do you get kapara if you didn't do tshuva?
And then
he
talks about this like body of like Knesset Yisrael that is transcends the individual kapara.
Right. And the kapara of the Sar HaMashaleach is a kapara for Tzibur,
yeah.
Right? So anybody who's part of the Tzibur has access to the kapara of the Tzibur regardless of their individual status, right? Because the Tzibur is getting kapara. So if you're part of the Tzibur, then regardless of your tshuva, you are getting kapara as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
The only person who's not included in the kapara of the Sar HaMashaleach is someone who is chayav kari. Because they're not part of the
Tzibur
anymore.
Exactly, right, because that's what Kari says, right, is cutting off of the Tzibur. So that's the Rav's proof, which I thought could open up something really fascinating, right? If we're talking so much about Tzibur and Yom Kippur and Sar HaMashaleach, is it a coincidence, what's the punishment for not keeping the Inuyim of Yom Kippur?
Kari,
right? Which might be a mitzvah saseh, which would be really shocking, because right? If you look in the Pshut HaShem Ekev, like the Pesukim, right, it's formulated as a positive commandment. So how could we have either, I mean, some of the Gaonim it is, otherwise it kind of sounds like it. How could you have Karis for Mrs. S.A.?
Well, you have it for Brit Milah and Korban
Pesach. Awesome, right? Exactly. Those are the two paradigms. You have Karis for Brit Milah and Korban Pesach. Why is that? So how do you get a penalty of being cut off for not keeping Brit Milah and not keeping Korban Pesach?
It's about, like, essential things to be a part of Israel.
Exactly, right? It's part of being a Messiah for the nation, right? So 100%, right? Brit Milah, national identity, right? Chametz, lots to talk about there with national identity. I think we actually did, no, maybe not. We did, yeah. We did Brit Milah. And so maybe Yom Kippur, I thought, might be the same thing, right? Like, when the Tzibur has its kapara, so if you're not participating in the day, then not participating in the day of the kapara of the Tzibur means that you're cutting yourself off from the Tzibur as well. I thought that might be something. I don't think he talks about that, but I think it looks really well with what he's saying there. Okay, so that's proof number 8 from the Rav.
But doesn't, like, the Gemara, I think, in Mahu, but I forget where, talk about how it's just Korban Pesach and Brit Milah?
Yes, it does. So now you have to, two things. So number one, you're right, that's Akasha on those who count Inui as a mitzvah saseh. So I'm not sure what the answer would be. It's a great question. I'm not sure, Rav Meidan, if you, in the Rus book that Rav Meidan has, so in the first chapter of that one, so he talks about how the death of Elimelech HaMnachon would kill you, and he argues in classic Rav Meidan fashion that what did Nachman and Kilian and Elimelech do? What did they do in the story in Rus? What happens getting a Rus?
They left during the...
Yeah, they left during the famine. They left the Am Yisrael. They left Eretz Yisrael in time of crisis. And what happens? What happens to them?
They die.
They die young. They die young. They die childless.
Yeah, exactly.
They get Karis.
Yes.
Right?
Never
say this. Yeah. It works very well. So how he would, and he's got all the footnotes, but how he would work, first of all, what's the Isra Levi Arts? I mean, I know the Isra Levi Arts Yisrael, but there's no Chiyuv Karis living Arts Yisrael. So how does he work with that? I'm not sure. How does he work with that Gemara? I'm not sure. But the concept is out there. Okay, Beseder. So can we talk for, do you guys have to go? Can we talk for 5 more minutes? Is that okay? Sure.
Okay.
So we have all these proofs. Let's line them up very quickly, and then we'll look at the complications. Number one, Rashi's position about individuals voluntarily donating a carbon, that it's not a carbon tzibur, right? Proof number two, ain't a tzibur mesim, you can never have the tzibur die alpidin. Proof number three, those kohanim with their minchas kohen, right, that even though they donated the half shekel, it's not considered mincha of the kohen, it's considered mincha of all the people. Proof number four, women, men under 20, men under 60,
all, right, if we argue with Ricky Baker, which most people do, and say that there is a shaychus to karbanos tzibur, so how does it happen if they're not paying a machzis shekel? Right, so the answer is going to be that it's a karban of the tzibur, it's not a karban of the individuals who supply the machzis, machzis shekel. Case number five, right? Lo tishchet chametz, lo tishchet al chametz tam zivchi. Right, we talked about where Tosa said that it's impossible that for a carbon tamid, right, we'd have an iser for the kohen to shecht it if one of the owners of the tamid owned chametz. And Sfas Emes says, "What do you mean it's impossible? It's just be on a sochan apatre." So the answer is no, it's impossible because it's a carbon sebor. So it's a carbon sebor. One of the owners has chametz. One of the individuals has chametz. That doesn't make him enough. That doesn't make him an owner for purposes of making this chametz owned. Then we had the Ragachavar's proof that you can't donate your machzis shekel on the installment plan, because once you give it, it's no longer yours. And the Ragachavar's other proof from Piskei Tosos, who said that if somebody donates something to the tzibur, it's not theirs anymore, it now belongs to the tzibur. And finally, we had the Rav's proof, right from the Rambam, where how could you have kapara from the Sar Mishtaleach without tshuva? And the answer was that this is kapara of the tzibur, not kapara of the individual, and that's why it breaks down along the lines of kares, versus not kares, right? Because if you're part of the tzibur, you get the kapara. If you're not part of the tzibur, you don't. So that, I think, is a pretty ironclad list of proofs right there. So now that we have all the proofs, we can look at a couple of problems and then develop an answer. So now we shift back to the stuff that Rav Daniel has. So these are the last two sources on the sheet, and they're very short. The Rashi in Erech and Dalet Amud Aleph, and the Rambam in the first Halacha and Temura. So Rashi in Erech and we, Dasi's question raised this earlier. Rashi explains why is it that if the Kohanim are paying machzis shekels, the karban is not considered a minchas kohen. So Rashi over here says that it's because we only have this halacha of minchas kohen if it's an individual. But minchas tzibur, he says, zil basar ruba. Zil basar ruba when it comes to minchas tzibur. If you want to trigger the halacha of minchas kohen, you have to have a majority of owners be kohanim, and in our case, you have a majority of the owners being non-kohanim. Right? So that's not the explanation that's in the Yerushalmi. And Rashi's explanation seems to not work so well, we're saying, right? That's not so great because Rashi was like our first source. So why would you say that being right? We have the answer. It's a great answer. If the mincha is brought by the tzibur, it's not brought by the individuals. So the fact that some of the individuals are kohanim should not shoot it down. Rashi says no. The fact that a majority of the people giving the money are non-kohanim means that the karban has the status of a not minchas kohen, and it doesn't have to be burned. That's problem one. Problem two, we actually talked to this Rambam a little bit, right? In the world of temura, right, which again, right, if you designate an animal's karban, so you're not allowed to switch it for a different karban, and that halacha only applies to a karban yachid. Right, it's carbon tzibur, if it's carbon shutfin, you can't make that into a temura because you have competing ownerships, right, as we talked about. The Rambam has a chiddush, though, that even though you can't make a temura, if you attempt to, you have violated the Esser Midarais and you get malkos. So the Rambam says that's the case not only for shutfin, it's also the case for tzibur. If I have a carbon tzibur and then I try to make a temura out of it, I will get malkos. So asks Rav Dani the following question. Let's say Matt has a carbon yachid, right? You have your own carbon, and I tried to make a temura on your carbon. So that's not going to do anything, right? Because we have a principle that ein adam oser davar she'eino shelo. I can't touch something which doesn't belong to someone else, right? So if it's not my carbon, I can't, not forget about creating a temura. I haven't violated any isur, right? All I've said, it's like I could say, you know, abracadabra. It's just the same as saying this is a temura. It's a total waste of time. So why is it that when it comes to a carbon of the tzibur, we're saying that it seems like it sort of is yours because you do violate the isur, at least according to the Rambam, right? Other Rishonim can disagree, but we'd like to explain the Rambam.
So how can we fit this Rashi and fit this Rambam in with the concept we've been developing until now? So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to, you know, kind of adjust a little bit. Right? We've been giving a very one-sided presentation, right? We're going to have to say that it's a little bit more nuanced, right? That, look, the Yachid still is part of the Tzibor, right? And apparently the Yachid is considered, you know, an owner of the carbon, right? There is a transcendence, but we can't say that there's no bridging whatsoever. And then you have to say that it kind of devolves on a case-by-case basis, right? So we have to talk about, right, you have, the Yachid has some connection, right? But is he considered an owner? So it makes a lot of sense to say that he's not an owner, but he's connected to the carbon, right? The Tzibor owns the carbon. By being part of the Tzibor, right, I get into the club. Right, I can...
It's a kufya.
Yeah, exactly, right? Again, right, a similar conceptual move to the kufya kviusa discussion we had before, right? That there are totally shades of gray between being in the door and being out of the door, right? You could say you're not the bailim, but you're in the door, you're in the room, right? Or maybe you are, you know, a level C bailim, but not, you know, the primary owners of the carbon. So, you know, your low level of ownership could give you enough of a connection to make a tamura, but it's not going to give you enough of a connection to that, you know, your death will render this carbon a carbon chatas shemesa, right? And maybe that's the Rashi when it comes to Mechas Kohen as well. Maybe the Machlokas, right, between Rashi and Yerushalmi, we agree with this concept of Tzibor. Maybe the Machlokas in Rashi and Yerushalmi is, right, does whatever connection the Kohen has to the carbon Tzibor, is that connection enough to potentially cause problems? As long as you had a majority of Kohanim, right? That would be what Rashi would say. They're not the owners, but they're connected to the carbon, and that's enough to create problems if they were a majority. Whereas Yerushalmi will say, no, right? Connection is nothing. You have to be a real owner, and the Kohanim are certainly not owners. The owner is the Tzibor, and that's why the Yerushalmi is going to wipe this off, right? So we have our eight proofs. We have our couple of exceptions. The answer to that is going to be that we have to introduce a little bit of nuance into the discussion. Okay, Yeshkov, thanks for letting me go over time. Okay.